1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe joining me on today's Neil Bradley Show, 1340WNBS.com. And this is one of those weeks where we've had some during the summer where it pressed us to maybe get it 20, 25 minutes, but we could probably do 2 or 3 hours. And that's just with the sports. If we included Game of Thrones in their finale, we could do another couple hours just on that.
I'd say so.
So, we did about an hour here before, which it was great. But let's go ahead and stick with sports. Murray State football will open the season coming up Thursday night. That's been confirmed. I know there may have been some questions. Will they consider moving the game, anything like that? For whatever reason, if they have talked through it, we have confirmed they will play Thursday night. Supposed to be quite rainy with the Harvey remnants rolling through, but it's a team willing to get started. And Ed, I can't wait to get out there, even though it is going to be kind of nasty, more than likely.
You know, you hope that Harvey kind of delays its arrival. It's been very slow. It just made landfall for the second time early this morning near Louisiana. So that's a long way to travel. You know, so you do wonder how long it's going to take for those storms to roll up here. But I think the first thing that I'm going to be looking for is, can the Racers sustain offensive drives? We've talked so much, you and I, just the last month and a half about how this defense is going to be improved. That, to me, obviously you want to see it against another team. The questions are on offense, not just at running back with a lot of those changes there from a criminal aspect, but also at quarterback. You have a new quarterback in Shuler Bentley.
Right.
That's the two things that I'm going to be looking at. Can this offense stay on the same page, take the calls from the sideline, operate in a no-huddle formation, and have a rhythm? And that's just going to be, in my opinion, I think that's the key to the game on Thursday night, is can this offense have rhythm with new faces at key positions?
Well, by now fans know about the Mario McGraw situation. He was involved in an incident Friday night, allegedly, and dismissed from the team Saturday. So I'm taking a look, and as you'll see, this is the chart that I use. Once the season goes on, this will have current statistics. And at the running back slot, I have 6 Racer running backs listed, and you can see the carries and yardage listed from last year. And you'll notice it's all blank. No one has ever carried a ball for the Racers at running back who will play tomorrow night.
And this is, again, very similar to the quarterback situation going into fall camp. You either could have gone with guys, there are guys on the team that have football experience at a college football game. Mm-hmm. You had one guy in Cameron Burse who had one start for the Racers.
He threw 32 passes last year. And that's the only quarterback we've had that threw for the Racers last year.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. That's now you have a running back position. You know, 2 weeks ago, this was a team looking at potentially your leading rusher from 2015 in Roman Clay, potentially getting carries to start the season.
Right.
He was nursing a pectoral tear and was trying to bounce back from some alleged misdemeanors in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Obviously, a DUI changes that situation. And then the same with Mario McGraw. That's your 2016 rushing leader that was going to come back and be a part of this team. And, you know, due to some unfortunate decisions, is no longer affiliated with Racer football. So your 2015 rusher and your 2016 leading rusher, both gone. Now all of a sudden, you're going to have a guy carrying the rock to start the season. Anybody that carries the rock this season will be their first time in a Racer uniform. That's got to start somewhere. I mean, at some point, Roman Clay would have graduated. Mario McGraw would have graduated.
Right.
And they would have gone with new faces. But now you're looking at DJ Pinnick, you know, a freshman from St. Louis. You're looking at potentially Nick Collins moving from the wide receiver position. He was a redshirt freshman last year. He's never had a carry. 5'7", probably 185 pounds. Kind of a feisty, you know, sideline to sideline type of back. I don't think that they would move Demetric Johnson out of the wide receiver. Right. I haven't heard any mention of it at all. I did mention it in my story yesterday because he does have running back experience that maybe in some sort of subset package that they could use him back there. But the goal is to use him as a slot receiver. Potentially former Marshall County
Nolan Nichols, who's a redshirt junior, has a potential shot at maybe some carries. He carried it some in several scrimmages here in the fall and had a good spring.
Short yardage guy, yeah.
Yeah, for all intensive purposes. And then, of course, a linebacker that they converted to running back in Kyrie Hawkins, I believe is probably on this list of guys that had carries during the preseason and had them during the scrimmages, but also has never carried the football in under the lights, as Coach Stewart would put it. You know, none of the running backs have carried the ball under the lights. So, but the opportunity is there. They have guys that they do trust. Stewart did say on Monday that he still believes he has the depth at running back to be a contender this season and to keep the offense moving. The question is, can they do it? And that's what we have to see.
Now, receiving-wise, they have seven receivers who caught passes, including five of those with double-digit receptions last year. So that's where the experience lies among the offense, as well as some good experience along the offensive line. A couple of kids that also look good in fall ball, and that was Sylvan Turner, redshirted, and then Rodney Castile. They're going to get some grabs too this season.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm glad you brought that up. If there's any seasoned part of that offense, it is the line, and it is at wide receiver. And that is excellent news for a running back trying to find his way and for a quarterback trying to find his way. If you can trust the offensive line and you can trust your wide receivers to make the play, then your quarterback and your running back just have to go out and play. Have fun with it. I know that that's a very cliche way to put it, but just go out, do your job, get your 3 or 4 yards per carry. If you break a big one, go with it. You know, get behind your lead blockers. Run blocking wasn't an issue in fall camp. For all intensive conversation, you know, that was never the issue. I think the one question that Coach Stewart had going into this season was, can we pass pro? Can we pass protect? And there were some questions with that during the scrimmages. But, you know, part of that, you wonder, and we saw this last year with Katie Humphreys, was it better defense because the defense is starting to gel more and there was better pass rushing, or was it hesitation from the quarterbacks to make a play, make a throw?
Right.
And that's, with six new quarterbacks at the helm, I'd be afraid to make a play too. You know, if I see a guy make a hitch and go and his guy's got his inside route, I don't know if I'd make that throw either. I'd probably take the sack, as Kenny Wooten, one of the pass rushers that they're high on this year, the JUCO transfer, blitzes me off of my blind side. I don't know. It's a tough call. That's why I don't play the sport, you know, that, and I'd probably die. But yeah. It's just one of those situations where it's hard to tell until you start seeing some true game film. Is the quarterback position and is this offense just hesitant right now? Because I think Steve Adams was telling me, I think 13, 14 sacks during scrimmages this year,
right,
that they registered like as true sacks. You know, is that a better defense for Racers, or is that a hesitant offense for the Racers? I right. don't know. That stuff will sort itself out as the season rolls along.
And a lot of that, if you watch scrimmages, the sacks are guys touching them with two hands,
right,
generally. Usually they'll let some of the one-hand stuff go. So you really are unable to gauge the elusiveness of a quarterback, if there is any. Now, defensively, they have 15 players with 10 or more tackles. So a wealth of experience there. You mentioned Wooten. He's from a nationally ranked JUCO program. They also have Jason Johnson. He had double-digit tackles at Western Kentucky. And a kid they're really high on, Don Parker. So I got a feeling the defense, it's deeper than it's been during in the Mitch Stewart era by far. I think they'll take another step up this season, provided the offense doesn't have them on the field for the entire game.
Right, and that's a great question. Can you find the balance between keeping your offense motoring and letting your defense make plays? Last year, this was an offense under Katie Humphreys that still averaged 26 points per game. Just so happened that the defense gave up 35 points per game. And the problem was the offense, for everything that it was, and for as special as it was, third down conversion rate was still way too low in these type of offenses. You know, and that, and part of that had to do with the fact that from a running game perspective, particularly early on, there was no consistency in the running game. They had pass pro all day long, but the running game just never really took off. And, you know, your biggest play of last season, four games into the year, was a 50-yard touchdown late by Mario McGraw against SIU. And at that point, that was like double the rushing yardage by the team at that point. So, and again, I understand they opened at Illinois, you know, two of the better pass rushers from that program. you know, really created a lot of pressure from a running game perspective. They also lost Mark Dodson to injury at that point, you know, four plays into that game. And so, you know, there were some things that led to that those factors, but you just have to have a running game. And if this running game can average 3.5 to 4 yards a carry, or even right at 3 yards a carry, you'd still be improved from last season and you'd keep the offense on the field. And, you know, again, defense can't give up 35 points per game, but this is also the same defense that held teams to 59% in the red zone for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, and forced a lot of field goals. That next step would be to keep that offense on the field.
Special teams, you have a good punter, Landon Stratton. He's had two good back-to-back years, 21st in the nation at the FCS level in punting, so no issue there. Gabriel Vicente at least will start it off as the place kicker, and when he came to Murray, he had never kicked a football before. He's a soccer player, but he's really good. They said, let's see what you can do. Nailed one after another, so they feel very comfortable with him. Says he has a good, strong leg, but with James Sappington nursing the groin injury, they had to go out and get somebody.
Right.
And this late in the year, this is all they could find, and it turns out he may be really good.
Well, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because I've wanted to talk about Sappington for a while, and I know you have too. I know that as far as injuries are concerned, I think in a dire situation, they feel like they could play Sappington on a field goal unit. But it's kickoff that he was so special last year. He averaged 60 yards a kickoff last season. Anybody that takes a look at him understands. He had 11 tackles on special teams.
Yes.
And whether that's a good thing or not, he was capable of doing it. But after sustaining a groin injury this summer, he's been on the sidelines running camera, moving the chains, working through scrimmages in different ways, and hasn't been able to really test that leg out since. So they had to go get a guy for insurance. And so, yeah, I honestly, probably midway through the season, if Vicente is, you know, 7 of 10 from field goals with 56, 58 yards in kickoff and things like that, might be worth a feature story, just because from a storyline perspective, they were hoping. I mean, Sappington's the guy that was nailing 58, 60-yard field goals before he came to Murray State. And matter of fact, had that viral video where he nailed a 70-yarder off of a tee. That's just crazy kind of kicking power. But a groin injury is so testy and so strange. Like, you look healthy, you're walking around fine, you're doing football things, but as far as long kickoffs and long field goals, you can't really pull that any further. And so you had to go get a guy, and Vicente's that guy.
Kentucky Wesleyan comes in. This is a team that won 3 games last year, but that was coming off a 9-victory season. They sent one of their receivers to the pros. Yes, Jacksonville Jaguars, don't have him. They have 2 receivers in their starting lineup who caught balls last year. They have 1 running back that ran a ball. That's Miles Walker. But a quarterback who ended the season as the starter, Mike McGee, big kid, 6'5", 56% passer last season.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the receiver from Jacksonville. Keelan Cole was phenomenal for Kentucky Wesleyan last year. This is a guy that averaged 24 yards a catch, 1,400 yards. I believe at his division level was an All-American going into his last season. It does look like that he may crack the roster at Jacksonville, which just goes to show you, if you can play football at any level and be successful at the professional level, you know, CFL, NFL, somewhere in Europe. It doesn't matter where you're playing football, they'll find you. And that's just, we can talk about that some other time. That's just how recruiting has changed so much and scouting has changed so much at the NFL and the professional level. The one receiver that I keep bringing my mind to, though, is Jared Beard. You know, this is a guy that was a 900-yard receiver at Austin Peay last year. Obviously, a few switches and changes here and there, and another solid recruiting class at Austin Peay has led for Beard, you know, to find other opportunities elsewhere, and he happened to find one at Kentucky Wesleyan. So this is a guy that the Racers have faced. DeMontre Wade defended him last year. I think that the secondary is going to respect this offense. They know that they have to come out and play. They know that Kentucky Wesleyan has a couple of weapons, and they're going to have to lock down for him. And one of them happens to be McGee, the previous starting quarterback, coming in after that 4-game stretch last season, and Beard as his top target.
It's a busy Thursday night with the Racers kicking off against Kentucky Wesleyan. Eastern Illinois is at Indiana State. Tennessee State at Georgia State with a paycheck game there. Clarion is at Martin. Austin Peay at Cincinnati with a paycheck game. and Western Illinois nationally ranked is at Tennessee Tech. Two games Saturday, EKU picks up a paycheck at Western Kentucky, and SEMO is at Kansas. Also Saturday, Kentucky is at Southern Miss. Louisville goes to Indianapolis and takes on Purdue. And then the big game, of course, nationally is Florida State and Alabama. It's a really good one. So I love getting it. I'm not a big fan of having a Thursday night game, except when I've had it Saturday, having Saturday off to watch football. Kind of like that.
Yeah, and I think everybody is going to really like that, regardless of the weather situations and things like that. It is Labor Day weekend. I think something I did think about when I woke up this morning, though, is that I do want to realize whatever hesitations and whatever changes do happen with, you know, Harvey incoming, I just have to remember, you know, Texas and Louisiana have been inundated, and if the worst that we get of it is a few delayed football games, you know, I'll take it. I know that we're expecting pretty anywhere between 6 to 8 inches of rain, potential for some severe weather somewhere in that mix at some point. Nobody really knows when yet. Maybe Friday, maybe early Saturday. But it is a good opportunity. This is Labor Day weekend, and there are some excellent college football games to start. I know last week was the real start to college football season, but the full slate of games, FCS, FBS going at it.
And good ones.
And good ones on top of that. We're here. College football season has arrived, and as John Rothstein tweeted this morning, we are 30 days away from college basketball.
And, man, you talk about leading right in. We have schedules. Last week, kind of a, as my wife would call it, let's go ahead and call it what it is, a smart-ass comment that Murray State had a schedule and is working on one we might know something about. It turned out Friday was the day they released it, and you and I sort of knew there was a big fish hanging out there if the Racers could catch it, and they caught it in bringing Auburn in. It is you get one here, you got to go there for one, and then a money game somewhere down the road. Not three consecutive years of Auburn, but this is a great get to bring in an SEC team to the CFSB Center.
It's huge, and I'll tell you what's really, really funny about this. So I saw it, and so did Super Racer fan Joe Darnell, when Bruce Pearl announced, basically, there was almost a virtual press release. There was a story that came out of Auburn. It was like, hey, we are looking for a game. Bruce Pearl put it out there. He's like, we need a non-conference game.
Yeah.
And I quietly messaged him, and I was like, man, what if the Racers went and got Auburn? This is 2 months ago.
Yeah.
When they, you know, because, I mean, coaches are still trying to figure out schedules up until as of last week.
You're right.
You know, and there's other programs. The Racers weren't one of the, you know, weren't the only program to, you know, you still have... South Carolina hasn't released their non-conference schedule. You know, the SEC schedule's out. There's teams around the country. That's a Final Four program. Yeah. They're coming off a Final Four appearance, and they haven't finished their schedule yet. It just happens. You know, you run into situations. You try to figure out who's going to be on your team. You try to figure out who you want to play and where you can travel to. And that takes time and effort. And from a Racer perspective, we can't not play up the fact that they were frozen for 30 days. Let's just be real about it. Like, they could not schedule games for a month because they had to wait and see what was going to happen with the Missouri Valley. Mm-hmm. That being said, all of that came to fruition, or not to fruition, or whatever you want to call it, and they had to finish their schedule to get Auburn. First of all, I commend Bruce Pearl more than anything, because, and I don't mean that like that sounds to Racer basketball, but if Bruce Pearl is willing to take his team on what should be a tough road game, I don't care if the Racers were playing five chefs and three janitors, it doesn't matter, because Racer basketball wins 80% of their games at the CFSB Center. This is a tough matchup for Auburn. This is also a tough matchup for the Racers of Mustafa Heron and their recruiting class. Yeah. Is that how you pronounce his name? Is it Mustafa Heron?
I'm still in football mode. I have no idea.
He's a five-star guard who was an all-SEC freshman last year, averaged 14-6. He's really good. He's a load to bring down. He's 6'5". Every, you know, ounce of that is muscle. It's just one of those situations. Bruce has gone out and gotten two or three other pieces to go around him. And there's other guys on that team. They're escaping my memory right now. I'm like you. I'm sort of in football mode. But this schedule... I mean, you talk about Auburn, that is a marquee matchup. Jeff Bidwell did some digging. This is only the second time in the last 50 years that an SEC program has even come to Murray. And the last time was Ole Miss, I think, 92, 93?
92, 93 season.
Yeah, and that's DeVester?
That's Scott Edgar.
That's Scott Edgar. Yeah. Okay. So still, and that's all kind of a blur to me. I was 93. I was 8.
Shut up. I hate you.
So, but I'm just saying, like, it's such a rare thing for a Power 5 program, much less an SEC program, to visit. All day long, racers will be able to go play money games. You know, Georgia.
Yeah.
Auburn has been a money game before. Beat Auburn in the Charleston Classic. And then the year later, lost by 8 points in Cameron Payne's freshman year. So there's some recent Auburn blood there, just not in Murray. And right. That's a big thing. It's going to have a huge draw. But then we talk about the rest of the schedule. We already knew at SLU. You know, you're at, you know, Illinois State. You're at Wright State. You're at Detroit Mercy, which should be better from last year. They have a transfer coming from Michigan. You know, you're hosting MTSU. You're hosting SIU.
Yeah.
Really wish Western was on the schedule, but they're not. Of course, they probably don't even know who's on their team right now.
Maybe they do. Maybe they don't.
Zingers.
Maybe. But for fans, I'm telling you, Middle Tennessee still might be the best team coming to the CFSB Center this year. You may be excited about Auburn, but don't sleep on Middle Tennessee.
Absolutely not. Everybody keeps talking about how Western is a sure lock to win that league. Absolutely.
No.
Look, call Kermit Davis right now and ask them how they feel about that.
Yeah.
They still, if I'm not mistaken, they still have Giddy Potts.
Yeah. Yeah, they still got a bunch.
Yeah. They still have a loaded team, and I mean Conference USA could certainly have a multi-bid league this year. But I'm just telling you right now, I agree with you. Middle Tennessee coming here, that's a huge game. And that's actually, if you think about the schedule, that's actually the first true home game, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the season opens up with Brescia. Essentially,
and I think we play them Tuesday.
Yeah, essentially a dress rehearsal for both teams. You know, Brescia will be trying to figure out who they are. Mm-hmm. The Racers trying to figure out who they are. And then you play Middle at home. And that is an immediate test, just like it was last year at Middle. So It's certainly a great schedule. Again, I'm sure fans may frown at the fact that there's two non-Division I games. But with an 18-game conference schedule, that's 18 guaranteed Division I's. That back end is, I believe, Tennessee Tech and Jacksonville State are also paying visits to the CFSB. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's the
right.
Back end of that. We've talked a little bit about that, but that's all confirmed now. It's a lot of D1 basketball. And it's a lot of quality D1 basketball. St. Louis had a top 25 recruiting class this year. I talked with McMahon briefly about it last week when the schedule came out. Gave him a call, and you know this is a meaty, meaty schedule. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. If you were looking for spaghetti and meatballs, this is exactly what you wanted. For all intents and purposes, the Racers didn't have the time to build a schedule the same time anybody else did.
Yeah.
And this is what they came up with. This is chef salad. This is wonderful. You got the eggs, you got the ham, you got the carrots, you got the wedge cheese.
There's no tournament, but I think the reason there is because of that 30-day delay in the schedule. Those guys need to fill their tournament slots and kind of fell through the cracks. So I have a feeling they'll probably have something next year, just not this year.
You're right. And your toughest part of the schedule, in my opinion, comes in conference play. You have the back end, four games, on the road, where you play the Nashville Swing and the Jacksonville Tennessee Tech Swing. And that's it. That's your four games on the road then in the middle of January are probably your toughest part of the schedule. Like, if you don't come away from that stretch at least 2-2, you've struggled in January.
Right.
And that's probably the rest of it. There's enough balance between home and away that you can be at home for decent stretches and on the road for some decent stretches. So if the toughest part of my schedule from a travel standpoint is a four-game stretch in conference play, that's great.
A few weeks ago, I got a look at the women's schedule. I thought they were about to release that. Turned out they released it after the men's schedule. They did that on Monday. But I had known for a while they had Alabama, they had Louisville, and then they had Butler as the home opener on that schedule. And I think Rochelle Turner, if there was a question, well, you know, she's always been a high school coach. Can she schedule? Wow. I think this is just an absolutely terrific schedule for the Racer women.
Well, and you've got a road game too at UNC Greensboro, and that's another great game. Yeah, absolutely. You want to talk about, let's just talk about the road games. Louisville, Alabama, hosting Butler. Of course, granted, that is a Wednesday at 11 a.m., somebody was asking me the other day, like, why would it be that early? It sounds to me like
one of those kids' games, I think.
Yeah.
That's what that's going to be.
It'll be that.
Kids from around the area.
Yeah. And not only that, but then also Butler's on a swing somewhere else. It can be one of those situations where they can drive through, stay the night before, and then get on the road and get elsewhere. Mm. That's another great matchup. But you take a look at those four road games, UNC, Greensboro, Louisville, Alabama, and then there's one more.
East Tennessee, is that it?
East Tennessee's at home.
That's at home, okay.
They've got to play Alabama A&M on the road as well. That'll be another tough game. I know A&M's down for sure, but it's certainly a tough travel. Yeah. You know that, and those are always tough to get up and play for, but those four games alone, that's another meaty schedule for a women's basketball program that's in transition, trying to figure out where they are from a recruiting standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. Absolutely. I think Rochelle and her staff knocked it out of the park when you look at that schedule. You got two or three great, you know, obviously you still had some home and homes that you had to take care of. I think Northern Kentucky is part of that. East Tennessee, again, was part of that. They were at East Tennessee and Northern last year. But, you know, to go and get your Louisville's and your – even if you are playing there. I understand, yeah. UTM got Louisville to come play them last year. But, I mean, UTM was also defending champion of the
right.
OVC. That was kind of how that – or was defending regular season champion. And so, you know, it's one of those things where maybe over time, as Rochelle continues to build the program, she too can bring in maybe an ACC – or an SEC opponent, yeah, into the CFSB Center.
Well, that's happened. In fact, we did the Kentucky game at Murray State back at Racer Arena. It's been many years ago. So that's a little more doable than getting the Kentucky men or the Louisville men to come in here.
Right.
Which I can't say it'll never happen, but it's very difficult to make that kind of game happen.
It is very difficult to make that kind of game happen. I have wanted that game to happen since 1922. I wasn't alive in 22. Racer basketball started in, what, 25? 1925?
Maybe.
I think that's right. I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure, you know, Racer basketball starts in the mid-20s, early 30s. And yes, I'm very aware that men's basketball, the two teams have never played each other. There's a lot of pride there. I get it. You know, you can go get better money games. We've always talked about that, you know, I don't want to say Kentucky's cheap, but because they certainly aren't, but if you can go get a better money game and don't have to go as far,
yeah,
you know, then, you know, or go an equal distance to make more money.
Well, it's a money game.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get the most money, not a slap against Kentucky, if they're willing to pay 70 and someone will pay you 95,
you
with
take
our
20,
program, you get the 95.
You go take $25,000 extra.
You gotta do it.
Yeah, even if it's another 100 miles to travel.
I've seen what they get for SEC TV payouts. We wouldn't have to do that if the SEC will cut us in on a share of that. We wouldn't worry about any of that stuff. But since we're not in the SEC, we don't get a share of that TV
right.
money.
Well, and I'm
the OVC Digital Network doesn't have that kind of payout.
No, and that's the thing too. And I understand there's still, you know, there's a lot of questions. You have teams like EKU, Transy, you know, Center. They'll go play Kentucky and don't have, you know,
20-minute
Kentucky
drive.
State. Yeah,
for Transy, it's not even a 20-minute drive.
Yeah. But and that's my key argument. When you talk about, oh, well, they'll play everybody else in Kentucky. Well, everybody else in Kentucky is a heck of a lot closer to Lexington than
more
the Racers
ahead.
Are.
An hour drive.
Yeah. The Racers are 5 hours after a time change from Lexington. And day drive, yeah, I'm going to go to Lexington all day. No problem. I'm gonna be there three times next spring for state championships and things like that. Maybe some this year for football. Or no, football's at Western for the final year this year. Isn't that right?
I don't think so. I think they moved it all. I think it's at Kroger Field.
They've already moved it for this
Pretty
season?
Sure. I
yeah,
think so.
That's right. Either way, there's potential for me to be in Lexington a lot this year. I'm going to be making that drive. So will our high school reporter, Al Willman. But, you know, for the Racers to make that drive and make it affordable and worth the time, you know, is Kentucky going to come down here and play? Nah.
Well, they have nothing to gain by doing that.
But
I mean, there's just nothing to gain.
But that's why I applaud Bruce Pearl and Auburn. I don't want to say they have nothing to gain, but it certainly does look better if the Racers come away with that win instead of Auburn coming away with that win.
But Bruce has done this. If you'll check his track record, he's done this for years. When he got major jobs, I remember either reading or hearing him say, I used to complain all the time, I guess when he was at Milwaukee, that big schools wouldn't come play us. So he essentially said, paraphrasing here, I'm a hypocrite if I get at a big school and then won't go play a mid-major. So he kind of feels an obligation because of what he said in the past to play one here and there, and he's done that. I commend him. I wish more coaches would do that, and also I wish the NCAA, when the when they're setting the bids, the selection Sunday, would give teams credit. Hey, you went out and played a tough game, tough environment, and won that. I'm going to give you credit for going and doing that.
Yeah, because guess what? I just mentioned it 5 minutes ago. The Racers have won 80% of their home games at the CFSB Center. Come hell or high water, it doesn't matter who they put on the court, they win games at home. That's what you do. And they've been able to defend the CFSB Center and Racer Arena very effectively. I don't see that changing this year, and I think Bruce Pearl knew that this was going to be a tough test. He knew that Jonathan Stark and Terrell Miller were coming back. He knew that Coach McMahon and his staff have a new head, a new assistant in Casey Long, knew that they went out and recruited a bunch of these guys, and some of the guys that they recruited are kind of from around his area. Mm-hmm. So he knows about those kids. I mean, he wouldn't be doing his due diligence if he didn't. So he knows that this would be a tough test for his team, and that it's a worthwhile game.
Let's move to high school football. Last week, Crosstown Classic, we got to see the new lights, new scoreboard at Stewart Stadium. Pretty good ball game. Murray High, it was Callaway County's opener, and that kind of showed up, I think, a little bit. They had some turnover issues, had some tackles they missed. Murray with some issues the week before, they kind of cleaned some of that up. Callaway will probably do that, but still a fun game anytime those teams get together.
Oh, absolutely, and that was actually a really good game early. It's 21-12. Murray comes out, kicks an onside kick, really kind of shakes things up a little bit, and runs away with it there in the second half. Outscored their opponents 21-7 on the downstretch, and won that game 42-19. So that, you know, that really kind of changed the game there. You recover that onside kick, you score on that drive, go up 28-12. You know, Callaway's backed up a little bit, you know, has a little bit, you know, they need to make one, they needed to make a drive to answer. Didn't have it at that particular time. Murray scores on the next drive, forces a couple turnovers, and then it was able to really, honestly, the backbreaker of that game was the third down Hunter Utley touchdown to make it 35-12, and that was huge. You know, Callaway's defense was playing really well up until that point, and I don't even want to say they were playing poorly at that point. It just happened to be that Utley rolled out to the right, found Michael Parks there on the right sideline. Parks breaks his tackle and goes 88 yards for a touchdown. That's a game-breaking play. It's a back-breaking play. And really, the moment, that's what Keith Hodge said, and that's what I ended up putting in my story. He felt that that's when the game really turned. Because a two-score game, anything can happen with 14 to 16 minutes left. Make it a three-score game, and all of a sudden, it's a lot of trouble. And so, you know, that was certainly another classic game. We had beautiful weather for it. It was actually perfect. I know that we can't talk about that this week. We're not really sure what's going to happen, but don't know if it's going to be beautiful weather. Graves County and McCracken, they're going to be playing at 7 o'clock on Friday. They have determined to stand pat and play their game. I think Eric Chumbler and myself have already dubbed it the Mud Bowl. It's going to be, I hope they tarp the field. They're not going to. That was a joke, but it's going to be gross. And it should be, it'll be a running fest. And then, of course, this week is also, it's Tillman Mayfield week, which is always a huge, huge mashup. One of the longest running rivalries in the country, regardless of high school football programs. They've played 100 plus times. It's just an unbelievable atmosphere. Also, probably going to be a Mud Bowl. And it's also at 7 o'clock. Those are the two games that Al and I will be at on Friday. And we'll see how it all shakes up. Again, weather is a factor. But those are our top two games for the week. And there's some other, you'll mention there's some other great games this week.
Yeah. Even though it's a game that's probably two teams that won't be winning state championships, it's a rival game. Fulton County plays at Fulton City. You have Murray High going to Madisonville, Caldwell County at Hopkinsville, Ballard Memorial at Marshall County, Trigg at Crittenden, Christian County goes to Henderson County, and then Saturday, Callaway County, with that long trip, they will head to Metcalf County for a 5:30 game.
Right, and again, a lot of these games, that Fulton County-Fulton City game,
it'd be a good game.
I've always said that I've wanted to cover that game, and it just so happens that every time they play, it's Mayfield-Tillman or 5A-6A matching up. It's not a week later on in the season where you get close to Halloween and you got guys on the bye week. If it were a bye week, I'd go to Fulton County-Fulton City. There's no question. I would love to see that rivalry. I would love to see that town turn out for that game. Fulton County, Fulton City football is a lot like what happens when Carlisle boys basketball meets up with Hickman County boys basketball. Everybody and their grandmother's at that game.
Yeah.
And they're packed into a gym like sardines in a can, and it's wonderful. It's a great atmosphere. The last two times that I've even covered Carlisle-Hickman doubleheader, has been, you know, standing room only. And that just makes for a great atmosphere and a great time. And I fully expect the same thing for Fulton County and Fulton City. But, you know, a lot of those other games on that schedule, a lot of feeler games. You know, you're not really into district play yet, and you just got to kind of figure out where you are going into essentially it's called week two, but week three of football, where some of these teams are trying to really find themselves going into week four.
Before we close out, I just wanted to mention Murray State Soccer. They're unbeaten. Harriet Withers, unbelievable start already with 5 goals. They're at Northern Kentucky Sunday. Racer Volleyball plays at Chattanooga this weekend. I think that starts actually Friday in that tournament. They won 2 of 3, which isn't bad when considering all the seniors they lost. But right now, they're poised to have really successful non-conference seasons.
Well, so far, absolutely. Withers is off to an incredible start. She's, I think, easily top 10, top 15 in NCAA points. She doesn't have an assist yet, but you do have 5 goals. I mean, this last week alone, she was 10 of 13 from shots to shots on goal. Scored 5 times. You know, 2 of those were game winners this last week. Just unbelievable start for her in that offense. We were able to talk to Coach Groves and Maya Watford on on Monday, actually, after the football press conference. I'm hoping to write a story either today or tomorrow about, you know, kind of their hot start, 3-0. I don't necessarily know if undefeated it is on the table, because that would mean a national championship.
Yeah.
That's maybe a little much to ask, but this is a team with 31 women on the roster, and all 31 have a potential to play. Now, obviously, he's going to sit a few and save them for later situations and perhaps even next season, but this is one of the deeper, more talented teams that's ever been fielded at Murray State, and I think it's not too early to say that. Now, whether they win an OVC championship or not, that's up to them and the rest of the OVC, really, who is, you know, some of those teams have gotten off to a pretty good start as well. But, you know, you look at what the Racers have been able to do in the first 3 games, plus what they did in the non-conference, the exhibition games, and you're looking at a 5-0 start. And again, I understand exhibition's exhibition. You're out there. But when you put up a 5-0 win against Evansville and a 2-0 win against Western, and then start out 3-0, the only thing you can say is this is a good team, and they just want to keep it rolling. And the same with volleyball. I mean, outside of that opening season loss to Ohio, which Kevin DeVries said, you know, Ohio was full of Amazonian women, you know, this is a small Racer team that's going to be able to pass the ball effectively, get it to the net, and attack. And that's how they were able to beat Southeast Louisiana. And then, really, in all intensive purposes, I wish I knew a little bit more about women's volleyball, but the Samford win is a good win, especially on their home court. I don't know where it is in terms of skill sets and things like that, but for everything that I've heard, the win against Samford is pretty big and is quite the start, you know, to a very new Racer volleyball team.
Ed, I appreciate it. Very long show. We'll do it again next week and have a lot more to talk about, although I don't think we'll have any scheduling information next week, hopefully.
No scheduling information?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, but
I think everyone's released everything.
Are we finally done with previews?
I think so. I hope so. But we'll have a bunch to talk about, no doubt about that. So we'll see you then, all right?
Sure.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.